What really gets my dick hard is...
What?
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast, episode 5. This is a special one. This is post Master of Puppets, and what better person to talk about after Master of Puppets?
Cliff Burton.
Cliff Burton.
He's the dude.
On the four-string motherfucker. James's words, not ours.
I was about to say, is that an unofficial nickname?
Yeah, there's old live footage where Hetfield's introducing him right before he plays like the intro to
From the Bell Tolls
or something. And he's like, on the four-string motherfucker. Which is a great nickname for him slash the bass.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the four-string motherfucker. I think that was great.
Nice. They should have actually put that in the liner notes.
They should. Yeah. Lars, drums. James, guitar, vocals. Cliff, four-string motherfucker. But yeah, we, you know, as we've talked about in the intro episode of this podcast about what we're going to do episodes on every member, past members. And yeah, we couldn't think of a better person to stray from the album episodes than Cliff Burton. Plus, you know, Master of Puppets was released last week, so... And, you know, Cliff Burton, as everyone knows, you know, passed away on that tour.
Right. The podcast was released last week, not the actual record.
Did I say record?
No.
Oh,
I'm just clarifying. Master of Puppets, which was released about 7 days ago in 2016.
Yeah. I thought you were correcting me, and I had a brain fart and said, no. Master of Puppets was released last week,
I was just
2017.
I was just anticipating the mail we're going to get.
Yeah, totally. But I think, you know, we've had a couple episodes come out so far, and we're starting to get some good feedback from you guys, from the fans, Metallica fans, the Metallica community. And it's been really encouraging, you know, because me and Clint were, you know, a little nervous, you know, because, I mean, Metallica fans are
there is some very strong-willed, opinionated folks.
Totally. Ourselves
included.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, after we released the first three episodes on January 1st, the morning of January 2nd, I woke up and saw some comments on Instagram, some stuff on Reddit, and some email stuff. And one of the emails that we received, of all places, it was one of the first ones I noticed, from Istanbul, Turkey.
We have a fan base there now, I guess.
So I feel like we should, before we get into the Cliff Burton episode, it might be good to... maybe read a little something from this. It was really cool. And this guy is a Metallica fan. I think it was about 8 to 10 paragraphs.
Yeah, it's a fairly long email, which we loved.
Yeah, I loved it.
And one of the things I love the most about it is he said some nice things about...
What's his name? Samim?
Samim.
Samim, yeah. And Samim, if you're listening, we apologize if we're mispronouncing that.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry about that. He said a lot of cool stuff. He recommended some topics, which one of the things that I love about engaging with you guys, if you guys want to continue to write into us, is he also included just a few critiques maybe of some of our facts that we might have gotten wrong or some squirrely stuff. Because it's going to happen. I mean, Ethan and I are fairly normal people who have lives outside of Metallica. So we're
And when you're doing these like kind of off the cuff, you know, like, you know, we do make some notes, but most of these episodes are us just kind of spitballing, just going.
Kind of drawing upon the knowledge of my 13-year-old brain.
Exactly.
20 years later.
Yeah, so we're going to forget stuff, that to say.
Well, one of the things that Samim brought up that we mentioned on the Ride the Lightning episode, and this was also brought up by a Reddit user, is that we mentioned that when they were making Ride the Lightning, you would think that the song they were most worried about being too commercial or too wimpy or whatever would have been Fade to Black, but...
Or Escape. Yeah, or too poppy. Yeah.
Exactly. But I had to go back and reread this because Samim brought to my attention, he did not think that Trapped Under Ice was the song that they were that worried about. He thought it might be Escape, which...
Yeah, which I thought too.
Which, looking back, makes the most sense for sure.
It's probably one of the most poppy choruses they've ever written.
But I did go back and look. I looked at Mick Wall's book, and I looked at what's the book right there? The Joel McIver.
Internet.
The
Mick Wall book?
No, that one. That one.
Oh, this one here. It's Justice for All, The Truth About Metallica.
And who's the author?
Joel McIver.
Right. So he wrote a book about Cliff too, which we were talking about earlier. But yeah. He confirms it in his book that for some reason the song that was really that they were most worried about was Trapped Under Ice. So
yeah. Well, I think he got that info from Fleming too. Producer.
Right. And Fleming even mentioned it, right?
He's the one that mentioned it.
It's possible all these dudes have gotten it wrong after all these years. It definitely upon retrospect seems like Escape is more poppy than Trapped Under Ice, but he did mention that. And another thing that he brought to our attention was when we talked about John Bush.
Yeah. That I take blame for that. When I was kind of going making some notes for that episode, when I read online that, you know, John Bush was considered to join Metallica, I guess, like, in my defense, the way it was worded online, it's basically said that Hetfield was a little uncomfortable doing guitar and vocals, so they thought we'd bring in John Bush in. So my first thought was, well, of course, John Bush is going to take over and lead vocals. They already did Kill 'Em All.
Right. But they were even talking about replacing him as a vocalist even after Kill 'Em All.
Yeah, which is crazy. So my apologies. I mean, I read it. It was a little vague online what I read. I just assumed, like, why would he sing? I know he's a great singer, but, like, I just assumed he played guitar, too. I mean, I don't know. But hey, Samim, man, thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Samim also pointed this to, which I think you and I both listened to this today, to the Lars Ulrich interview on the Jericho podcast.
Yeah, I was actually reminded of that podcast episode because of Samim. I had it downloaded on my phone, ready to listen to, but he brought up that there were some really good Cliff Burton moments
right.
that Lars talks about on the episode, which there are.
Yes, there are.
I think he goes into Cliff for about, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes.
It's towards the front end of the podcast.
Yeah, but I mean, when I saw that email from Samim in Istanbul.
Istanbul.
That's so far away. I had to go run some errands and go do some work stuff and immediately put that podcast episode on. And yeah, Lars shares some really good Cliff stuff in that
episode.
And
it was fun listening to that today too. Just and hearing James's interview with Joe Rogan. Like, it's been fun hearing this sort of roll out Hardwired press.
Yeah.
Although the James Joe Rogan, did you notice that they talked about bees? For quite a long time.
I loved it. Only because I
it was a lot of bee talk.
There was a lot of bee talk, but here's why I like that. And this is just me. I have my other podcast, The Pirate Satellite. A lot of guests I have on, we may not even talk about what they do with their band.
Like, right.
I have a friend who's in this band called Mayday Parade, and we, for the first 30 minutes, we talked about aliens. I'm not kidding. What's funny is we didn't even go into his band at all. At one point, God. I mentioned it, but that was it.
Aliens, huh?
But yeah. But this is what I like about podcasts. Like, obviously, this podcast, Metal Up Your Podcast, is very specific.
Sure.
We're talking about Metallica, but like Joe Rogan's, he's interviewing Hetfield. They do talk about the band, but I like hearing that side of someone like Hetfield.
I was amazed. That he is so into bees and beekeeping and that he was so knowledgeable.
Yeah.
After about 30 minutes of it, though, I was like, can we talk about the fucking record?
Can we please talk about Metallica?
I'm a little exhausted on bee knowledge.
I loved it. I started that episode of the Joe Rogan podcast when I was making breakfast and they started talking about bees. And I really liked it because I've got a friend who keeps bees about 45 minutes south of here. He's got like 8 hives.
Yeah.
I've got another friend that I work with, Nacho, who has a farm out in Watertown, Tennessee, who wants to get bees at some point. And so I was all in.
He's an
aspiring
beekeeper.
Oh, yeah. I don't have any bees, but I like when somebody I look up to, like a Hetfield, goes off the deep end we're not talking about Metallica or even music. We're talking about beekeeping.
You know what I was thinking when I was listening to it? I was thinking, like, you know what? He's just a straight-up addict. And if it's not going to be booze or sex or whatever, may as well put that energy into beekeeping.
You might as well.
I wonder how many metal heads or Metallica fans are, like, interested in bees now.
I mean, I think, in general, he's addicted now to, like, being healthy and being organic and, you know, killing his own, you know, food and feeding his family and raising bees and getting his own honey and all that stuff. I admire it. I think it's cool.
And I appreciate some.
And this is coming from a vegetarian that doesn't eat meat, so.
Would you eat bees, though? Would that count as eating meat?
Like actual bees? Like
sure.
Put a bee in my mouth and chew it?
Sure.
No, I don't want to kill bees. Like they pollinate shit. They're the reason we have so many delicious foods.
Here's a question Samim asked that we'll spend a few minutes on, because I thought this was interesting.
Yeah.
He says, it's common to hear people talk about songs that grow on them from, like, Load. Are there any songs from Ride or Master of Puppets you feel different about now compared to 20 years ago, good or bad?
Wow. That is a good question.
I don't know if I have anything like that.
It's weird with a record like that, or Puppets, or even Justice, God, even the Black Album, that I've listened to for so long.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely no song on... He was talking about Red Lightning?
He was just saying, like song, instead of, like, Black Album on, like...
Yeah.
What we would consider sort of the more classic albums, have we changed our thoughts on a classic Metallica song? Like, did you love Master of Puppets, but now you're kind of like, meh, the song, you know what I mean?
To me, there's nothing on Master of Puppets, for instance, that I'm like, eh, you know, I'm 38 years old now, that fucking sucks.
Yeah, I agree. Me neither.
I don't think so, you know. I think it's quite the opposite for most Metallica records, except for the one that I still don't like. Use Your Minds. But even like Load and Reload, which he brings up, like, there's stuff, you know, that when it first came out, or even honestly, you know, 10 years after it came out, I'm like, ugh, still can't get into Mama Said.
Oh, yeah.
But then, like, one day I kind of re-listened to it. I still don't love every song off those records, but I had a different appreciation for it. Maybe it's because I got more into this kind of music or that kind of music.
I will say, for me, when we did our Kill 'Em All episode, like, really diving into those songs, I did sort of rediscover, like, man, Hit the Lights kicks ass. Like,
Totally.
Because I will say, other than the one record that shall not be named, that might be the one I listen to the least.
Might be?
No. The record that should not be named is on its own level of unlistenable.
Oh, okay.
But I'm saying after that record,
okay.
Kill 'Em All might be the one I've listened to the least in my fandom.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's the first record. One, surprisingly, like, you know, with releasing this podcast, we, you know, released three episodes right off the bat. Kill 'Em All is the least listened to.
Yeah, right now, it's so far. Least popular after one day.
So far, but it's only one day.
It's only been one day.
Which, by the way, everyone listening who has invested in this thing so far, we can't thank you enough. Our first day exceeded our expectations.
Yeah, man, it was awesome.
Yeah, we didn't know what we were doing. I mean, we knew we were doing, but we didn't know what to expect. And, you know, we've got, like, you know, 35 followers on Instagram. And I've found this out with doing my other podcast that, you know, social media numbers don't mean shit when it comes to what people want to listen to. You know, like... There was, you know, day one, we had over 300 listens of the episodes, and that's not even close to, you know, our 11 followers on Twitter, you know what I mean? So word it seems to have spread, and, you know, Metallica fans told their Metallica fans and their friends and all that stuff that, hey, check this out.
Yeah, so, we love it. So if you got, and I'm going to mention, Samim said some really cool shit about Cliff that I'm going to get to.
This is a Samim episode.
Well, he wrote us a long letter.
He did. Samim, you committed to this shit.
And we're going to try to pick one or two things that you, so we can interact with you guys a little bit. So we love it when you write in.
Please write us. Yeah.
What's the, it's metalupyourpodcast@gmail.com?
No, it's metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. Okay. I misquoted that on one episode. I apologize. But metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. Please email us and give us feedback, questions, comments. We love to read stuff on shows.
I did get a pretty funny feedback that I think I sent you a screenshot of. I got on some of the Metallica forums just to, like, let everyone know what was up.
Yeah, totally.
And I was on one of them, and I sort of just described what we were doing, and I sort of listed what the first few episodes were like, and one commenter wrote back simply, "That sounds awful."
I saw that. You sent that to me last night. That was so good.
Took the time to say, "That sounds awful."
I even tried, before we released the first three episodes on January 1st, I was like, you know, I follow a bunch of, on my personal Instagram page, I follow a bunch of Metallica fan pages because I love seeing all these photos and things. And I went to one page and I thought, you know, maybe a good, like, little marketing thing will be to, like, throw up a comment because I'm a fan of these fan pages.
Right.
And I thought, oh, I'll just put this up, like, under the Metal Up Your Podcast Instagram, like, hey, Metallica fans, like, we're starting a podcast. There's nothing else out there like it. Hope you listen to it. And one of the first replies, it wasn't from that account, but some other fan just, like, at replied me and said, "Fuck off." I thought, oh, all right, cool. Awesome. I'm into the same thing you are, and you're telling me to fuck off. I found out that
that's an interesting energy.
There's some territorial fans out there, so.
And it's cool. Like, so I have two things to say to these people. The first thing is, I think you would like it if you gave it a shot.
Totally.
Because we're just straight up Metallica nerds. Second thing is, if you don't like it or it sounds bad, you are totally free and welcome to fuck off.
And you're also totally free and welcome to come on the podcast and tell your story and tell us why you hate it so much.
I don't know if I want to hear their story. You might have to be
I'm not saying like
flat, you're the good angel.
I'm not saying fly to Nashville and come sit in my studio.
Come live with us.
I'm saying like we'll give you a call, record your phone conversation, and if you're a dick, we're gonna hang up. You know. So.
Well, let's get into Cliff. Let's talk about
Cliff. Let's get into Cliff. By the way, thank you, Samim, for writing in and sending us a lengthy email. He actually, like, I think in the email said, like, I'm sorry, this is so long.
No, we love
it. Don't apologize. Nah. We love it. I was literally waking up and laying in bed reading this email going, oh my gosh, like somebody from Turkey is crazy.
Very cool.
So thank you again to Samim and the rest of you out there. Please email us and let's talk. We're going to read some of your stuff. So let's get into Cliff Burton.
All right. Which I do think if you've listened to our first three episodes, Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning, and Master of Puppets, it's filled with Cliff love. This has been fun month to listen to those records and think about Cliff.
To me, it's almost a little sad that this is... I mean, Cliff will come up in future episodes, sure.
Mm-hmm.
But this is kind of the last episode already.
Yeah.
That's like, it's going to have a ton of Cliff talk.
I know.
You know, I mean, he had, you know, obviously some input on Injustice for All. It makes me sad. Unless we can get his dad, Ray Burton, on the podcast. I don't know.
Which we've reached out. Luckily, he wasn't one of the ones that have said fuck off. Not yet.
But if he did, I follow, if anybody on Instagram, he doesn't have that many followers. You'd be surprised. I think it's Ray Burton or Cliff Burton Family on Instagram. And I followed him like when he first started his account, when he had like 200 followers.
Wow.
I felt like really special. And I sent him a message when we started this podcast and just, you know, basically said, hey, like, you know, we love your son. We love what he contributed to Metallica and to music and all this stuff. And I reached out. But if he would reply, fuck off, I'd be like, cool.
That'd be kind of cool.
It'd be totally cool. So
our exclusive interview with Ray Burton.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing, Ray? Fuck off.
Fuck off. I feel like he's a pretty upstanding, like, seems like a fairly conservative guy. He probably wouldn't say fuck off.
He's pretty chill.
He would probably say, no thank you.
No thank you. Yeah. Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, totally.
To your point about this sort of being the last of Cliff, it is mentionable to say that, and I know that even Lars talking today on the, listening to the Chris Jericho podcast, he passed away a long time ago now, but he's still, it's like he's been with the band the whole time.
Like, yeah, I mean, Lars talked about it in the episode. He said, like, you know, Cliff is a part of us. Just, he still is. He always will be.
Yeah.
And we touched on this, I think, maybe in the, probably both the Kill 'Em All and Ride Lightning episode. Cliff Burton left a legacy that most musicians from whatever band that have passed away can't leave.
Very rare. They can't
leave this kind of legacy.
Yeah.
It's very rare. You know, I mean, Cliff Burton's dad, Ray, still goes to shows, still shows up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a Cliff Burton signature bass came out not too long ago. All these things, like he's still one of the biggest parts of Metallica.
Didn't he actually go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction and sort of
he kind of accepted for Cliff.
That's pretty cool.
It was awesome. I rewatched all their speeches recently, and Ray Burton's was awesome because you would think I got a little like, you know, choked up.
Verklempt?
A little verklempt, yeah. But it was cool because, like, you know, Ray Burton still had this just kind of like attitude that Cliff probably had. He was just like very happy. It wasn't like I felt a little sad, but he didn't come across that way, you know? And
shoot, he's got to be up there too. Like when was Cliff born? Cliff was born in
February 10th, 1962. And then was killed in the bus accident we all know about on September 27th, 86.
24 years old. Wow.
I mean, his contribution, not only to music, but just to Metallica. I mean, he only played on
three
full-length records.
Insane.
He's credited on the No Left to Leather demo, but actually didn't play on it. Ron McGovney did, but It's insane. Like, I mean, who leaves that kind of legacy after only three records?
I know.
I mean, a lot of it has to do with the fact that he was a part of a band that was, you know, part of the Big Four.
Right, that went on to
do a bunch
of great things.
Yeah, and the birth of thrash metal and stuff like that. So, but I mean, by the time Cliff died, they still weren't like a household name. They were huge. They were, you know, an insanely big band with no radio support, no TVs, no MTV, none of that stuff. They didn't make their first video until after Cliff died.
Yeah, it is a bummer to think about. He never really got to see. It's like he got to see the making of probably their most beloved record, but he didn't get to see sort of the world dominating.
Totally.
Like, take away the question of would Cliff have liked the Black Album? Who,
right.
Who cares? Who knows? But
I think he would.
But I do too.
But so we care.
But him, but him not even just getting to see the realization,
right.
Of, you know, these kids in the Bay Area just duking it out, becoming, yeah. 10 years later,
right.
The most important metal band in the world.
Well, I think the cool thing about Cliff was that, you know, and it's fairly documented that, like, you know, Cliff was, he, it sounds cliche, but he was all about the music. You know,
right.
he was, you know, introduced to classical music by his dad. He learned piano before he learned bass. Had been playing bass since he was 13 after his brother died. You know, he really was invested in just the musicality of what Metallica was. You know, I'm sure he got excited when they got more fans and they got more popular and there was like girls around. Sure. But I think at the end of the day, he was invested in music.
Yeah, I agree.
He was invested in getting better. And trying new things, you know, in you know, writing the, you know, the intro to Fight Fire with Fire, you know, that's very classical sounding.
Right.
You know, that was very unmetal.
Right.
You know, and I love that about Cliff, that he had that influence on those guys. Like, you know, Lars talked about it on the podcast, you know, like, fans asked him, like, what would happen if Cliff was still in the band? What would you guys sound like? Or would the Black Album exist? All that stuff. And I do love his response. And he says, it doesn't matter. Because mm-hmm. what happened, happened.
Right.
You know, he doesn't even say what we said, like, yeah, Cliff would like the Black Album, you know, but I like that. He's, you know, he seemed like a very, you know, someone in the moment guy and someone who would like to push the rest of the guys to get better.
Yeah. I think we're all, as Metallica fans, really lucky that we had him as long as we did and that he was able to impart, because I think the influence of Cliff has remained in the band since forever.
For sure, yeah.
Their melodic sensibility, their harmonic sensibility,
yep.
Their open-mindedness to trying out new things. I think a lot of that came from Cliff. I mean,
totally.
We were talking, as usual, talking Metallica before we started rolling.
Yes, of course.
About how, you know, they even relocated to San Francisco because of Cliff. Because
they wanted him in the band
that bad.
And I think when they went and saw Trauma in L.A., James and Lars.
Which Trauma was Cliff's first, like, real band.
First, like, somewhat bigger band.
Known,
yeah,
band.
Yeah. We should point out that he did have a band called Easy Street, named after a strip club.
And the Easy of Easy Street were the capital letters,
yeah,
E and Z.
Easy, yeah. And then Agents of Misfortune. Both mm-hmm. bands, by the way, which also featured Mike Borden and Jim Martin from Faith No More. And Lars even talked about that on that podcast with
right.
Jericho today, how they were, like, super tight.
Right.
And just really, like, best friends in the Bay Area.
And he did. I got a kick out of this because I'm from Birmingham, Alabama, and I grew up around rednecks,
yeah.
And may even myself still somewhat in my secret heart be a redneck, where he described Cliff and his little band of brothers as kind of like the rednecks of San Francisco.
Well, they were still considered Bay Area where they lived.
Yeah.
In Castro Valley, but I'm from Southern California, and I can tell you that everyone outside of California thinks, like, oh, California, it's like sunshine, rainbows, and
sure.
You don't think of rednecks living in California, but what we call it in Southern California, we didn't call them rednecks, we called them desert rats, because we lived out in, you know, Southern California, you go inland, it's all desert.
Right, sure.
But essentially, yeah, it's rednecks, you know, it's like you go out to the desert, you go out to the, like, further out into the East Bay in Northern California. Essentially, yeah, it's kind of that redneck kind of lifestyle.
Well, and frankly, I can see it. I mean, Cliff looks like a lot of dudes I went to high school with.
Yeah, totally.
In Birmingham, the bell bottoms and the denim jacket,
yeah.
And sort of weed smoking hippie, and listening to Lynyrd Skynyrd and ZZ Top, and
yeah, I love that. Lars shared some stories on that podcast about, like, Cliff's musical tastes.
Yeah,
like they'd be on the bus and, like,
which
you know,
would blow your mind, the how diverse.
The fact that Cliff didn't care for Iron Maiden is crazy to me.
Right.
or Diamond Head and those bands, like the British Invasion bands and all that stuff. He did, he like, I'm sure he thought there was some, you know, good songwriting, good melodies, good parts. But, you know,
I think he took it all in. And I think he was also tempering James and Lars, who self-described as, you know, they'd put on an Iron Maiden song and bang their head or whatever. Whereas Cliff would just be chill. And then he'd maybe play a Peter Gabriel record.
Yeah.
Or a Yes record. Yeah. You know, like,
or I think Lars even mentioned on that podcast, like one of his favorite bands was The Police.
The Police. Which kind of makes sense.
It makes sense. Like Sting being like a bass player and, like, and being a great
kind
bass player.
Proggy, you know.
But if you think about a band like The Police and a band like Metallica,
not a lot of comparisons to be drawn.
No, but like I love The Police personally.
I do too. But you got that reggae streak in you.
That's the thing. Yeah, I like, you know, some of my first bands I played in were like reggae and ska bands, and there was a huge reggae influence in The Police. So then you got a guy like Cliff Burton who loves The Police.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume mostly because of Sting and his bass lines and maybe melodies, maybe the whole thing. I don't know. But it's crazy, yeah, that like you have a song like by The Police, like So Lonely, that's basically a reggae song on the verses, and Cliff probably loved that song.
Can you imagine like a rejected portion of Orion that's just reggae?
Yeah, totally. The bridge where it starts with the bass, which I probably very sloppily played on the Master
which
of Puppets
episode.
You can
hear on our Master of Puppets episode.
Yeah, but yeah, well, what if the original version of that was reggae?
Okay.
Oh man, that would be awesome. I would back it.
That might be where Lars and James might put their foot down.
They may have finally.
We're not going to put reggae on a thrash record.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Cliff's one of those guys that, you know, I didn't get into the band until after he was gone for a while. But you look back and if you, especially if you're a musician, you can look at a guy like that and see his influence on the other guys, see his influence on the records, on the songwriting. And I mean, Kill 'Em All to Ride Lightning to Master Puppets, each record was multiple steps up.
Yeah.
In production, in songwriting, in quality, in arrangements, all that stuff.
Yeah. If you, each record, you're hearing a band grow.
Oh, yeah.
Exponentially, totally. In my opinion. I mean, the difference between, I mean, you go from Metal Militia to that acoustic intro of Fight Fire with Fire.
Yeah.
I mean, there, a lot of shit happened in between that.
Yeah, totally. To Damage Incorporated, whatever. I mean, it's, yeah. I still often, as we're talking about this and in general, when I listen to any of the Cliff records, I just get blown away at the influence he had and like how, you know, us in our, you know, mid to late 30s are still talking about him.
Sure.
Like we said before, like who leaves that kind of legacy?
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
who would be, we mentioned on the Puppets episode, we mentioned Bon Scott and Brian Johnson, which I think is might be the best example. But yeah, maybe someone like Layne Staley, who even, I saw Alice in Chains with their new guy, and he was awesome.
Oh, he's fucking great.
I had no problem with it. And I'm a Layne Staley guy.
Oh, yeah. I saw them with a Ryman.
But you've seen them like 10 years after, right? I saw them.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see Alice in Chains with the new singer until I think it was only like 2 years ago.
Man, I saw them in like 2007, which I guess like, even at that point, they'd had him a while. But
right.
But even then, it still doesn't come close to what Cliff left to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with like, you know, James, Lars and Kirk, like keeping that alive.
Yeah.
I'm sure the fans would always keep it alive, but they have always made it a point throughout their career to talk about him, to include his family. You know, even when you watch the Some Kind of Monster documentary, like when Rob Trujillo tries out, you know, Lars says like, nobody's played that way since Cliff.
He's
always like this shadow over them. That's,
I wonder if you think this though, because that particular line in that movie has always bothered me, which I don't know if our listeners know this yet, but obviously it's obvious I love Cliff Burton, but in my heart of hearts, I'm a Jason guy. And we'll get into why that is. It has a lot to do with my age. Yeah. And
don't
I,
get pissed off yet and email us just yet.
It has a lot to do with when I came online with Metallica, seeing them live, blah, blah, blah. But in that documentary, when he says that line about Cliff, to me, it felt less like a less like honoring Cliff and more like a dig at Jason.
You think so?
Well, here's the deal. They hired Jason.
Right.
So if they're like,
a month after Cliff died, by the way.
Which I get it. And they were grieving. I mean, they moved really fast. And I think James has even gone on record and saying he thinks they all moved way too fast and didn't take the time. But to slag on Jason for playing with a pick, for example, I'm like, well, you motherfuckers hired him. If you wanted, if you wanted Cliff Burton vibe, you should have gotten. How many people auditioned? You know, hundreds auditioned for that gig.
Sure.
After Cliff died,
Les Claypool being one of them from Primus, which is amazing.
Which is amazing, but I'm kind of glad that.
Well, of course, yeah. You know. We didn't want Les Claypool and Metallica. I love Primus, but yeah.
But you know, like if you wanted to get Cliff, then get someone who played like Cliff.
Totally.
It just felt like a rejection of like 17 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe they did want that, you know, Cliff style bass playing with someone like Jason, but didn't have it. But they're like, they were, I mean, those guys were, after Cliff died, I mean, they talk about it in you know, the Behind the Music, you know, episode where they were just fucking out of their minds after Cliff died.
And they
in
were
in mourning, hazing Jason for years, you know.
I think they probably hazed Jason almost the entire time.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
two writing credits over 17 years. We can get into that. We'll get
I think currently Jason is in Nashville right now. My friend met him.
Well, he was at the Casey Musgraves, Jason Isbell show at the Ryman.
Yeah. He might still be in town. My buddy Arun from this band Saves the Day posted a picture on Instagram Jason.
So out of all my friends that were playing that show that night, my friends in Isbell's band, my friend in Casey's band.
Yeah.
Everyone was so scared to actually ask him if he was Jason Newsted.
If you have to ask him if he's Jason Newsted, fuck you.
Well, but they were like,
I'm sure your friends are super cool.
No, I agree. I would have known for sure.
Even if he was like wearing glasses and like dressed down.
But they're all like, what would Jason Newsted be doing here? So he must be in town working on something.
If you've followed anything, if you've listened to the Eddie Trunk interview with him, you know that he's into like,
he's doing like
acoustic
outlaw
and country and all this stuff, which is, might be cool, might not be cool.
Yeah.
But I would know that looking over and be like, oh, that's Jason Newsted.
Me too. Oh, my friend Scott, who drums for Casey, I gave him a hard time. I told him.
By the way, I'm sorry I said fuck you to your friends. I've just got passionate for a second.
No. I literally said to this guy, you fucking blew it.
Scott Quintana?
Scott Quintana, yeah. Do you know Scott?
I don't know Scott. The only reason I saw your conversation with him on Twitter did you say hi to him? I'm a big Social Distortion fan, and they had a drummer for a while named Charlie Quintana.
Ah.
And I thought maybe that might be his son, because also a drummer.
Mm. I wouldn't know.
I don't know. Hey, Scott, is your dad Charlie? Did he play for Social Distortion?
By the way, for those of you listening, Ethan and I both are on Twitter and all that shit, and we often interact about music and about Metallica. If you guys want to find us there, you can find all that crap there,
Oh,
too.
Yeah. At Ethan Luck and at Clint Wells.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Doesn't matter.
And I don't want to get off on a Jason tangent, because we're going to do the Jason episode for sure. But,
oh, absolutely, yeah.
But there is a sense where, especially towards the end, obviously when Jason was replacing Cliff, where the stories are intermingled so much that you can't divorce them almost.
Yeah, totally.
So anyway, because Jason had to step into Cliff's legacy, and the band never really forgave him for that. So there's all kinds of that stuff happening.
It wasn't his fault. He just got a gig.
And I think he kicked ass on it. But anyway.
Of course, we'll get into that. Okay, right. let's not get too far off here. I'm trying to think of other, like, there's so many things about Cliff, like, and his legacy that even spilled over outside of Metallica.
Yeah.
I mean, Anthrax dedicated Among the Living to him.
Which is very sweet.
Very sweet. Well, they had history together, obviously.
Could they crash at their place?
Anthrax was on the tour that he got killed on.
That's right.
Yeah, they were the opening band on that.
And it was
European
their first
tour.
Time over there.
Yeah.
And they must have been so stoked.
For sure.
Their first European tour, they're opening for Metallica.
Yeah.
One of the stories I love about Cliff, I don't think this was with Anthrax, I think this was when they were in Europe with Ride the Lightning, is the opening band were big Metallica fans, and Cliff would... They refer to Cliff kind of the same way James and Lars have talked about him, as sort of like big brother,
right?
Everwise kind of guy. And they said that the first of three, like local opener, would be playing.
Mm-hmm.
And Cliff would go into the openers, the second of three dressing room, and he would just look around and say, weakness is emanating from the crowd. And then he would leave, just trying to get the opening band pumped, you know?
Yeah, like, totally.
Weakness is emanating from the crowd.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, someone like him and how long we've been listening to Metallica, know his legacy. You know, you kind of like, you know, identify with certain band members of bands you love.
Absolutely.
You always think like, oh, I feel like I would get along with that guy.
Absolutely.
All the stories I've heard about Cliff Burton, I always think like, oh man, I would totally be bros with him.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. I mean, I would like to. I would wish he was around. I would, you know.
I think so. You've got Kirk, who seems pleasant enough in this time, but was probably not a very like a strong presence. You got James, who was probably very strong presence.
Sure.
And then you got Lars, also very strong.
Yeah.
So I like the idea of Cliff being like chill.
Well, it's also hard to believe that like Cliff did have this chill about him. But he was also, if you think about the history of the entire band and the other bass players they've had, Cliff was kind of the only other guy in the history of that band that they actually like publicly have looked up to.
Yes, I agree.
And have actually like changed things about their band because of him.
Right.
There's nothing Kirk did that they were like, oh my gosh, Kirk just blew our minds. We have to rethink everything.
I think Kirk got the gig because they needed someone. He did an okay job.
I think he got the gig because he wasn't Mustaine. No offense, Kirk. I love Kirk Hammett. Don't
get
me wrong.
His personality is very different.
It's very different. And don't get pissed off and email us like you hate Kirk.
We love Kirk. No, no, no. We're going to do a whole Kirk thing.
He's written some incredible like parts and... Yeah,
he's essential to Metallica.
Of course, yeah, he totally is.
But Cliff is the only person that they had to basically beg to be in the band.
They moved out of Southern California so that he would join the band.
Just because they knew. There's something really special about Lars, how Lars can, you know, take 10 James Hetfield riffs and make it into Master Puppets. Like, right. Lars has a great vision.
He does.
It's one of his great strengths of the band. So, they were able to see in that trauma show... Which, man, wouldn't you love to just have been at that show that they were at?
Oh, my gosh. That would have been so cool.
Just to see what they saw.
I love that it's, you know, reported that that James and Lars were at that show and thought they heard a guitar player. And it's Cliff Burton soloing. Probably just overdriven like crazy through a Marshall or something with a wah pedal. I mean, like, who was doing that in the early 80s?
I do want to read a little thing from Samim's letter again. We've talked about Samim so much.
Are you still listening, Samim? We're back to you.
But he wrote this thing in his letter about Cliff that I actually thought he worded it really well, so I'm just going to read it.
Okay.
And it's kind of the Jason or Cliff dichotomy.
Okay.
Which we kind of reject a little bit. It's not an either or. They both had their own thing. But he said... So he's a Cliff guy, Jason or Cliff. Cliff, of course, no question. Cliff's the reason, or at least the primary symbol, of why and how Metallica was/is on a different level than any other metal band. And I thought that was super right on.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
He writes, while some bands may have had their equivalent of Battery and some others their Creeping Death, etc., I'm pretty sure only Metallica had Orion.
It's a meme.
He kind of nailed it, man.
Damn. Cheers to you. That's a great point. Well, I mean, we've talked about it before. I mean, like, Fight Fire with Fire intro, his influence on Fade to Black, Call of Cthulhu.
Right.
Orion, you know, I mean, you know, even though Lars didn't want to talk about, like, what would Metallica be like if Cliff Burton was still in the band, I kind of hate when people are like, oh, if Cliff was still in the band, they'd still be a thrash band and all that shit.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. They may have gone even way further off the path if Cliff was still in the band.
Right.
I don't mind speculating about this because I'm not in Metallica. Right. I understand why Lars doesn't want to do that. You know, he has a history, you know, for almost 40 years.
Imagine the Metallica/Yes album.
Totally.
Just keyboards.
Or the reggae bridge to Orion. You know, you know, it's, I don't know. I look and think of a guy like Cliff and it's like, we talked about before, there's a reason that they ended up doing something like the Black Album, something like Load, something like Reload.
I'll say this boldly. I think the Black Album is a direct result of a trajectory that Cliff had them on.
I think so too, yeah.
It wasn't just that, obviously. Life is very nuanced, complicated, blah, blah, blah. But the things that are happening melodically on the Black Album, to me, resonate of Cliff.
Totally. I mean that was, you know, arguably one of their most melodic records.
Yeah.
You know, great choruses, great melodies, great chord changes, like great structures, all that stuff. You know, I think, you know, if Cliff could, you know, show up just for a moment and listen to that, he'd be like, hey, nice job, guys. That sounds awesome.
What do you think Cliff would have thought about the intro to My Friend in Misery?
I think he would have thought it was beautiful.
Yeah, I do too.
I mean, that's one of my favorite songs. You know, he sure
did.
Was,
Jason
sure
did, was, did Jason write that? Did he get a write for?
I'm pretty sure he wrote that intro.
Okay, that's cool. I may be wrong. Which kind of is like a tribute to Cliff, almost. Even it's in its melodic sensibility and.
Yeah, I mean, Jason had like two like bass only intros on that record. So
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like he's Cliff's one of those guys that, like I said before, had a huge influence on Lars and James. To the point where all of a sudden, you know, there's acoustic guitar on, mm-hmm. you know, Red Lightning. You know, there's a ballad. You mm-hmm. know, there's this beautiful instrumental, all this stuff. It's just, we've said it before, but like, it's no wonder they did the Black Album.
Yeah, I agree.
You listen back to those old records and what Cliff was influenced by. I mean, even some of his song credits, I've got all of them listed here. Like,
let's list them out. Do you have them sequentially?
Yeah, kind of. I'll get to one last because I feel like it's my favorite kind of story.
All right.
But you know, Anesthesia, Fight Fire with Fire, Ride the Lightning, From the Bell Tolls, Fade to Black, Creeping Death, Call of Cthulhu, Master of Puppets, Orion, Damage Incorporated.
Hmm.
Also featured on Am I Evil and Blitzkrieg, which, you know, were cover songs.
Right.
But my favorite, one of my favorite songs, and Cliff, I guess, not influence song, but he had a hand in it, as To Live Is to Die.
Yes, me too.
You know, he has credit for the lyrics for the spoken word part. And what's cool is that from what I understand, that song came to be because of unused bass parts
mm-hmm.
that Cliff recorded for whatever, God knows what, other demos, other mm-hmm. riffs, something. And that's kind of how that song came to be.
Tragically, we still don't know what those bass parts sounded like.
Which we will get into on the Injustice for All episode. Or the Injustice for Jason
shame?
Episode.
Isn't it a shame? Like, yeah, we base this on some of Cliff's bass parts laying around. They're like, well, where are they?
Can you, Jason, can you re-record those? Okay, cool, I got it. Sounds great. Nobody knows how it
That is
sounds.
One thing that I can say definitively about the what would have happened had Cliff whatever.
Yeah.
You would have been able to hear the goddamn bass guitar on
Fuck
Injustice
yes,
for All.
Of course you would have, definitely. Absolutely.
Could you imagine them in the mixing room? They're like, they just keep turning the bass down to make room for the guitars. And Cliff's like, are you guys out of your fucking mind?
Yeah, totally. I don't want to get off topic because I want to talk about that so much.
Right.
But we have to save it for the Justice episode.
All right.
But yeah, I love that you know, even, you know, a couple years after Cliff's gone, he's still mm-hmm. in on Justice.
Yes.
You know, they use something he wrote as a spoken word part.
Right.
Parts, bass parts that whatever they originated from ended up on the record, obviously being re-recorded by Jason. But, yeah, I mean, and even after that, there was no other, like, obviously, credit to Cliff on any record after Justice, but he still lives in the band.
I've gone on record, I think, on this podcast saying that To Live Is to Die might be my favorite of the instrumental tracks. Even though Orion got me pretty hard there
yeah,
on the last episode.
They're both pretty awesome. The breakdown in To Live Is to Die, kind of acoustic. It almost sounds like a banjitar or something, but
right.
I love that part. I still, if I grab an acoustic or a nylon string, I will play it, and it's so fun.
Yeah.
It's a really beautiful part.
Yeah.
I mean, please email us and tell us what else we could talk about Cliff, you know, on, what else do you say? I mean, he had the hugest, one of the most, you know, I think biggest influences on, you know, Lars and James specifically. But I mean, I think Cliff had a huge hand in shaping what we call Metallica in 2017.
Yeah, I agree. I wonder if there are some fans that were identified so much with Cliff and were so into Cliff that, even when they got Jason, who I think kicks ass and kicked ass, it was just they couldn't move on with the band.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, what do you do? I mean, like, I mean, someone passes away. Like, you can't. You're never. No matter what, you can't replace them. You know, the you know, there's very few instances where somebody passes away in a band and all of a sudden someone else comes in and does better.
Yeah.
Like an AC/DC story, you know, yeah. Brian Johnson came in and sang vocals on
Back in Black,
which
is arguably their most well-known record.
Yeah, well, it's one of the best selling records of all time. Yeah, but
I will say I've never bought I haven't bought an Alice in Chains record since Lane passed away. I'll go see them live, and I think they're great live. But I haven't bought
Have you
their
listened
records.
To
No, I haven't really given him a shot.
Nick Raskin-Lennox did the two records they've put
the
out.
God Put they're, Dinosaurs in the... What are they?
Really good.
Are they?
Yes.
Black and Blue, is that one of them?
I think so, yeah. And they sound really good.
And the writing's good?
Yeah. Well, here's why I gave those records a chance. Lane Staley is a great singer. I mean, his voice, especially like when he was doing like Unplugged stuff.
She's
like,
so special.
MTV Unplugged was so good.
Yeah.
But to me... Now we're getting to an Alice in Chains podcast, but if I can tangent for a second, to me the signature sound of Alice in Chains was Jerry Cantrell's harmonies.
Hmm. Oh yeah, because they're very unusual.
Yes, that to me is what made very memorable parts of Alice in Chains songs.
It's kind of like the Cliff Burton of Alice in Chains in a sense.
Kind of, yeah, totally. I mean, that's a fair assessment.
Dude, one of my favorite Metallica moments involves Alice in Chains when Alice in Chains is doing their Unplugged and Mikey Nez is holding a guitar that he had written on Friends Don't Let Their Friends Cut Their Hair.
Yeah, friends don't let friends give each other haircuts or something like that.
And Metallica, because Metallica were notoriously big Alice in Chains fans. And
they're all bros and
they
stuff.
Came and sat front row
for
that Unplugged series.
That was like right when they cut their hair.
Right. It was like right during Load.
Which is a big deal.
Pretty, I guess it was a big deal.
Totally a big
deal.
We'll
get into that era.
You think Cliff would have cut his hair?
I mean, here's the deal, dude. At some point, everyone's got to cut their hair.
I don't know. Your hair's long. I don't know.
Well,
if I wasn't
talk to me,
if I wasn't losing my hair, I would grow it out. Fuck yes, I would.
Talk to me in 20 years. We'll if we're still doing this podcast in 20 years.
In 20 years?
Yeah.
Damn. In 20 years. God.
Hardwired.
I'll be 58 years old. Back when I was in my 30s.
Exactly.
Oh man.
James used to, I read that James used to, his pump up song before he went on stage for a minute there was Them Bones by Alice in Chains.
Which
is track one off a record called Dirt.
Yeah, if you guys, not a bad song to get pumped up to.
If you guys don't know that tune, check that shit out.
Yeah, that's a great record. Jeez. We could probably do an episode where we get into like connections to other bands too. That'd be fun.
The Kevin Bacon of Metallica,
Seven Degrees of Metallica, I guess. Like, how does this band connect with Metallica?
I do wish Cliff could have seen Metallica be the biggest metal band in the world.
Yeah, he probably has, somewhere.
Yeah.
Heaven or hell, or wherever you think he is. I mean, I'm sure...
Yeah.
I'm sure there's the spirit of Cliff Burton has seen it. And I'm sure he's got a smile on his face and he's headbanging.
And he's wearing denim.
Of course he is. He's always wearing denim. He was wearing denim probably before Jay Leno settled on an all denim outfit.
I wonder what he thought about all the leather lyrics in Kill 'Em All. He's like no left old
denim.
He's like, well.
It's like when we talked about no left old pleather. I think Cliff would have been what about no left old denim? Because that's all I own is denim. Oh, man. Well.
I think we've done it.
Of course, there's going to be some feedback where we didn't cover certain things, but you know, to our recollection and to our love of Metallica and Cliff, you know, what more can you say, man? The guy was a badass.
He's a badass, man. I
still play Anesthesia on bass sometimes when I'm tracking or just goofing around at home in my studio. Like I'll grab that or like I did on the last episode, I'll play Orion.
Yeah.
Memorable bass lines, man. The guy was a badass. The guy was musically, I think he was musically ahead of everybody else in that band while he was in the band.
Yeah. And our next episode is going to be our top 10s, which is going to be really fun.
Totally. Yeah.
And my top 10 is just permeated with not only songs that he played on, but songs that he sort of was, you know, the guiding light on.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, and then Ray Burton, if you're listening, please, we'd love to have you on. We'd love to talk about and honor your son.
And we're going to do a whole episode on Cliff 'Em All.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Which that's going to be super fun.
Yeah, something that came out after Cliff died. All the footage, they just was shot over the years. It's real low budget looking, but it's so bitching.
Yeah.
I remember first getting Cliff 'Em All, and I was just like, this says no order to it. It's just footage.
Yeah.
But it was so cool to see all that footage of them on the Puppets Tour opening for Ozzy. With the fucking crosses on stage. It was so cool. Yeah, we'll talk about all that stuff on the Cliff Mall episode.
So let's do this.
So we're not totally done with Cliff, but this is the most dedicated Cliff episode.
No, this
episode.
Is it, dude. We can never talk about Cliff again after we in this podcast.
No, we're going to. Sorry, he's going to live on in this podcast as he does in the band.
Let me ask you this. So right. Cliff's, at least until he passed away, obviously, Cliff's favorite Metallica song was Master of Puppets, which I think is pretty killer.
That's awesome.
What's your favorite Metallica song with Cliff?
With Cliff?
Yeah, your favorite sort of Cliff Metallica song.
Let me get specific here. Like one that he had a hand in writing or just of the Cliff era? Like
one that he was kind of more involved with, took the lead on.
Oh, okay. I mean, I gotta say Fade to Black.
Fade to Black?
That's one of my favorite Metallica songs, and he had a big part in that song.
Yeah.
I mean, Lars even talked about it on the Jericho podcast about the outro to Fade to Black, like that. How melodic it gets, and it changes keys.
Right.
You know, it goes from basically E minor to B minor.
Right.
And...
Well, B minor to A minor.
On the outro?
Oh, the outro to Fade to Black.
Yeah, the
Sorry.
Outro. Yeah, we're basically builds up. That's the first song where they get the ballad formula of ballad into, you know, heavier at the end. But, I mean, Fade to Black, to me, is a beautiful song. And even if you took out the vocals, I would still listen to it. And I think it's a beautiful song, well written, well arranged.
And how about a fact that song has no chorus?
Yeah,
it's sort of this big anti-chorus.
Well, the chorus is just a riff,
just da, no lick, da, no da, lyric. Da, da, yeah, da, 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 it's da, pretty da, neat. Da.
It's awesome. Yeah, there's no chorus. I mean, I guess you could. I mean, the bridge kind of sounds like a chorus, you know, on the da 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 da. Da. But yeah, again, these are the things that make Metallica and Cliff Burton. And his influence on a song like that, so special.
I'm going with Straight Up, For Whom the Bell Tolls.
All right, so we're staying on the same record?
Well, I got to stay on the same, yeah. I'm not intentionally staying on the same record.
Well, you love Red Lightning, so.
But Red Lightning's my favorite, but just For Whom the Bell Tolls, to me, is quintessential Cliff.
It is, totally.
It's that super fuzzed out, weird envelope filter.
A riff, a bass line he wrote before the band.
Crazy, I don't even know what key, there's a lot of bizarre things about that riff.
It's basically an E. Yeah, it's
dissonant.
Weird. It's so weird. I love it. But what's cool, even that riff you're talking about, I mean, you know, when he was in Agents of Misfortune.
Killer metal name, by the way.
It's kind of
way better than Easy Street.
Oh, a lot better than Easy Street. But, you know, when he had that band with the dudes from Faith No More, they did a Battle of the Bands, I think, in 81. And he played Anesthesia and the intro to For Whom the Bell Tolls. I don't know if it was like together or at separate parts of the set, but like that dude had those riffs laying around.
Says a lot about James and Lars that, you know, Agents of Misfortune couldn't take that part and make it a classic metal song.
Right. Man. God, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So, For Whom the Bell Tolls,
that would be my quintessential Cliff moment.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that both of us didn't choose something off. Well, at least for me, cause my favorite record is Puppets, but that we didn't choose something off of Puppets.
True.
Because that, I mean, that is like that's the gold mine of Metallica records to a lot of people. So,
I mean, Orion would be the contender for Puppets.
Of course. Of course. There's some about Fade to Black. I mean, I think, you know, I've said before, it's my favorite Metallica ballad.
Mm-hmm.
And just knowing that Cliff had a good influence on that song.
Yeah.
Is so cool.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it changes keys three times.
Yeah.
You know, the song starts in B minor, the verse is in A minor, then the bridge is in E minor, then the outro goes back to B minor.
And just all the harmonies at the end.
Oh, it's great. And what's cool about that song, even though Cliff had a big influence on it, there's not like a prominent bass line that like, I think in that song, he's just essentially playing the roots, you know, he's just holding down the low end.
Right. But his contribution was so much more than just like a flashy bass part.
Totally.
Which is so rad.
I'd imagine he probably helped out with arrangements and like, you know, hey, my idea is to go back into a B minor part, you know.
Right.
I just think it's so cool.
I wonder if there's any information out there where they really have like meted out who was sort of responsible for what.
I mean,
that would be really fascinating.
For how much Metallica has a camera crew around them and is always releasing behind the scenes stuff, I wish they would, you know, maybe after this record cycle winds down, I wish they would go through every record, almost do like, you know, the classic album series on VH1.
Mm-hmm.
I almost wish they would do that.
Yeah, sure.
They would sit there and just dissect every record It'd just be fun to hear, you know, information about every song.
Right.
Because that's all they know. They know what happened. Like, they were there. Like, that's, you don't forget a lot of that stuff. So
unless they truly have forgotten that Trapped Under Ice was not the song they were worried about, and it actually totally. Was Escape.
Like, oh, but they shit, just it was really Escape. Can't remember. I forgot about that. We just haven't played that song in forever. Oh, man. All right. Well, in conclusion, thank you for listening to the Cliff Burton episode.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was so fun. And again, email us, metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. Give us your questions, your feedback, your hatred, whatever. Bring it on. We will possibly read something from your email or your comments or your feedback like we did with Samim.
Yeah, thanks again, Samim, for reaching out. And for those of you who reached out and we didn't get to your letters, we apologize.
Yeah, you got to really commit like Samim. It's really going to stand out.
You've
got to
write us like a short novel and we'll read it on the podcast.
But yeah, as always, you can follow us on social media. On Instagram, it's Metal Up Your Podcast. On Twitter, it is Metal Up Your Cast. And you can search for us on Facebook, but after a while, we'll eventually get a URL. I think you have to have a certain amount of likes. It's really stupid. I hate Facebook. I just don't even want to promote it. I don't care.
I'm not even on Facebook anymore.
Good for you, man. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, I feel free. Oh. But come find us on all the bullcrap. So we can all totally. Engage with you and figure out how to keep moving forward.
Well, and we're not trying to hey, we need more followers and to be cool. Like, it's more for engagement, for, we'll post photos and little things in between episodes just to get stoked on what's coming up. And if something new is happening with Metallica, we'll post about it. So, you know, we want this to be another one of the many communities of Metallica. So, and we want to hear from you. So if that's a tweet at us or in the comment section of Instagram or an email.
Even if it includes, that sounds awful.
Totally. Or fuck off.
If you're a dick and you want to say that.
Totally. But anyways, thanks for listening to episode 5.
Thanks, guys.
Cliff
Peace
Burton.
Out. He's the dude. That's all we can say.
I feel like we need to keep going, but I don't know what else to say about Cliff Burton. Fucking Cliff Burton's
awesome.
He's
the best.
Totally.
He's the best.
On the four-string motherfucker.
The four-string motherfucker.
I'm ending on that.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.